down. And soon. Taking the reins, he leads the horse out of the stable and I follow, seeing Noah walk up to us and toss a couple of shovels into a pile next to the barn.
"Oh my God, are you okay?"
he blurts out, looking at me worried.
"Was there an animal attack I didn't know about?"
"What?" And then I see his bewildered stare drop and I follow his gaze, seeing the purposeful tears and shreds of my designer skinny jeans that my family's personal shopper put in my closet a few weeks ago. Slices of thigh peer out between shreds of dark washed material, and Jake laughs under his breath as I look back up to see a lopsided smile on Noah's cocky face. I lock my jaw and look away. He's teasing. I'm just not in the mood. Of course, I haven't been in the mood for years, so I guess this is who I am now. I tuck my hair behind my ear, and he eventually passes, his lips tight with the laugh he's holding in.
"Tiernan," Jake calls.
I walk over to where my uncle stands on the other side of the horse and follow his lead as he holds the stirrup toward me. Reaching up, I fist the reins in one hand and grab hold of the saddle in the other, slipping my left foot into the stirrup. Hoisting myself up, I swing my leg over and straddle the horse, fitting my other shoe into the right stirrup. It's a perfect fit. I don't need him to adjust anything. I haven't asked what we're doing or where we're going, knowing it doesn't really matter. I won't argue. I look around for his horse, but then all of a sudden, he's pulling himself up and plopping down right behind me. What is he doing? I said I know how to ride, I tell him, but he reaches in front of me and takes the reins, forcing me to let them go. I grip the horn of the saddle with both hands, scooching up as far as I can because he's right there and I'm practically in his lap. My heart starts beating a little harder as irritation crawls under my skin. I don't need help, I tell him. He only clicks his tongue and nudges the horse, setting us off around the barn. We round the wooden fence and gallop into the forest as the horse climbs the steep hill, sending us under the shade of the trees, and I squeeze my fists around the horn to try to keep myself from sliding backward. But as much as I try, I still feel his body there. The day grows darker as the trees shield us from the sun, and the air cools, but something pleasant stirs at the feel of the animal under me, her muscles working against my legs to get us up the hill. My pulse starts to race a little, but I don't hate it. A little refreshing, actually. He's solid behind me, and I feel secure, for the moment.
"Are you uncomfortable?"
he asks. His voice vibrates against my back, but I don't answer.
"Are you comfortable?"
he presses instead. Still, I stay silent. What does it matter anyway? He imposed himself despite my protest. Will it matter if I'm comfortable with him on the horse or not? He doesn't care. He just wants a response out of me. His sigh hits my ear.
"Yeah, your father could piss me off without saying much, too."
But I can't hear him. His legs rest against every inch of mine as I sit nestled between his thighs. Snug. Protected. Are you uncomfortable? I don't know, but I'm aware that maybe I should be. This is weird. We shouldn't be sitting like this. We continue up the hill, the rock and dirt kicking up under the horse as I look around, seeing the house behind us down below. The terrain evens out. And Jake pushes the horse a little faster as I relax into his hold around me, both of us bouncing up and down in the saddle. He blows a couple times, like something is in his face, and then his fingers brush my neck. I tense, the touch making me shiver.
"Do me a favor, okay?"
he says as he swipes my hair over my right shoulder.
"Keep your hair tied back as much as possible. We have lots of machines that can snag it."
I take over, smoothing my hair over my shoulder and out of his face. We stop at the top of the hill.
"Water tower, barn, shop,"
he calls out, pointing as we turn and look over the cliff to his property below.
There's a greenhouse over that hill, too.
I follow his gaze down to where the house sits through the trees in the distance below us, getting a decent view of the entire ranch. The house is happily situated in the center, the back of it facing us, with the attached garage to the left, or shop, I assume he's referring to, and then a barn on the other side of that. To the right is a water tower. The rocky hill we sit atop of sits behind the house, and I'd imagine there's a propane tank and a generator somewhere on the property. The leaves dance with the morning breeze, and something flaps its wings to my right as a steady, soft noise pounds in the distance. Water, maybe? Jake pulls away from the edge and we keep going, still farther away from the house and deeper into the forest, and I look down, seeing his fingers wrapped around each strap of the reins, nearly resting on my thighs. His arms lock me in, and despite the chill of the morning, I'm not cold.
You can't take the truck up in here, but the horses and ATVs do well, he tells me. Have Noah show you the ropes with the four-wheelers before you use one, okay?
I nod. I did a camp for extreme sports one summer, but he'll probably want his son to show me the ropes anyway. We keep going, and even though I'm a little hungry after not having eaten for so long and craving another coffee, because my eyelids are weighing heavy with the relaxing rocking of the ride, I stay quiet. I'm not thinking about anything out here, and it's nice. I close my eyes. But after a few moments, the rush of water grows louder, and the horse stops. I open my eyes, seeing we're at the edge of a cliff. I look into the distance. The peak. My heart thumps and I stop breathing for a moment as I take in the now unobstructed view. My God. A narrow valley runs below us between two mountains, a long waterfall rushing over one of them and into the river. Between the two mountains in the distance stands the peak, dark gray rock skirted with greenery. It's beautiful.
Like it? Jake asks.
I nod.
Do you like it?
He asks again in a stern voice, and I know he wants me to use my words. I just keep staring ahead, only able to whisper. I love it.
You can come back as much as you want, now that you know the way.
I feel him move behind me, and the saddle shifts a little.
But you need to carry protection with you when you leave the house, you understand?
I nod again, barely listening as I gape at the view, but he takes my chin and turns my head to face him.
This is very important, he insists. Do you understand? This isn't LA, it's not even Denver. We have black bears, mountain lions, coyotes, the occasional rattlesnake. You need to have your eyes open. You're on their turf now.
I pull away from his grasp and face forward again, but then I see him bring something up from behind me, and I tear my gaze away from the peak again to see that he holds a gun, or a rifle. Sliding the chamber open, he shows me the long, sharp, golden bullets, and then yanks the bolt back, chambering a bullet and making sure I'm watching as he does it.
Do you see the broken rope bridge hanging over there?
I look across the river, seeing the remnants of a wooden rope bridge hanging down the rock wall. Jesus, my heart skips a beat, taking in the drop below. Was that bridge actually a thing at one time? He puts the rifle in my hands.
Aim for it.
I grip the long firearm, the steel barrel tucked into a dark wood casing, and I'm kind of thankful. At least he's not wanting to talk. Did he shoot that deer with this? I let out a breath. Not likely. The mountain man probably has a whole cabinet of these things. Hesitating a moment, I finally lift the rifle, positioning the butt against my shoulder and wrapping my hand around the guard with my finger on the trigger. I close my left eye and peer down the line of sight toward the muzzle.
Okay, he tells me. Now calm your breathing. The bullet is already chambered, so just look down the sight and line up.
I pull the trigger, the bullet firing out of the barrel, echoing into the air, and a pop hits the rock wall down the opposite side, kicking up rock dust and cutting the board in half. Both parts fall and dangle by their respective ropes against the cliff. A breeze kicks up my hair a little, and I lower the rifle, opening both of my eyes as the thunder of the shot disappears in the distance, and the peaceful sound of the waterfall fills the air again. Jake sits behind me, still, and I hand the gun back to him and turn my attention back up to the peak, seeing some kind of a large bird breeze past my line of sight. He clears his throat.
"Well, I was going to suggest the boys empty some beer bottles for you tonight, but looks like you don't need the practice. I thought you said you couldn't shoot."
"I can't shoot animals," I tell him. "I thought that's what you were asking." The peak is massive, but so close. Such a strange feeling, something so big, reminding you that you're small, but also reminding you that you're part of a world full of magnificent things. What a great thing to be able to see and relearn every day. Jake dismounts the horse and I ease back in the seat, which is still warm from his body.
"I'm going to check some traps, so I'll walk home," he says.
I look down, meeting his eyes as I take the reins now.
"Start breakfast when you get back to the house," he tells me. "After you unsaddle the horse, of course."
I narrow my eyes without thinking. Cook? I have no problem helping out, but why that? I look away. I'll pitch in, but I'm not staying in the kitchen. I'm not sure if I have a problem with cooking or because that's where he wants me. Put the girl at the stove because, of course, she doesn't know how to ride a horse or shoot, right?
"Do you know how to tend crops instead?" he asks.
I straighten my spine, already knowing what he's getting at.
"Weed, water, fertilize," he goes on. "Aerate the land, plant. Do you know how to prepare to store some of those crops to feed the horses and livestock over the winter months?"
I still don't look at him.
"Milk cows," he continues, enjoying himself. "Train horses, operate a chainsaw, skin a deer."
"Yeah, okay."
"Can fruits and vegetables, drive a tractor, build a motorcycle from scratch."
I lock my jaw, but I don't answer.
"So cooking breakfast it is," he chirps. "We all do our part, Tiernan, if you want to eat."
I'll do my part and then some, but he could ask instead of give orders. I turn my head toward him again. "You're not my father, you know. I came here of my own free will and I can leave whenever I want." But instead of walking away or ignoring me, a hint of mischief hits his eyes and he smiles.
"Maybe," he taunts, "or maybe I'll decide that you'd benefit from some time here and that you can't leave after all."
My heart quickens.
"At least until I see you laugh," he adds, "or yell or scream or cry or fight or joke, and all in more than nods and one-word answers."
I stare at him, and I feel my eyes burn with anger. He cocks an eyebrow.
"Maybe I'll decide to honor your parents' wishes and keep you until you're of age."
"I'll be of age in 10 weeks.
"We'll be snowed in 8.
And he laughs, backing away from me. I feel the ghost of a snarl on my lips.
"Burn the bacon, Tiernan," he instructs as he walks away. "We like it that way."
Chapter 4. Tiernan. I sling the saddle over the bench in the barn, not caring if that's where I'm supposed to put it or not. He won't keep me here if I don't want to stay, will he? Whether or not he intends to actually scares me less than knowing he can. I came here thinking I was a guest, and him having power it wouldn't even occur to him to use. Well, it did, I guess.
Maybe he thinks he can get rent out of me. Or maybe he thinks me being a woman makes me a good cook. I'm not.
I exit the stable and head for the house, taking a shortcut through the attached shop and walking toward the door that will take me right into the kitchen. I shake my head at myself. I can't go home. And I don't want to go back to Bryn Mawr. God, the idea of seeing anyone I know. I close my eyes. Or smelling that house. I can't face it. The stark white walls, sitting in classrooms crowded with people I don't know how to talk to. My stomach turns and I stop, leaning my forehead into something hanging from the ceiling in the shop. I wrap my arm around a punching bag and close my eyes. I can't go home. I grip the leather, clenching it in my fist, and everything, my new reality, starts sinking in. It doesn't matter where I go, how I change my surroundings or run from all the places and people I don't want to see. I'm still me, running, leaving, hiding. There's no escape. As liquid heat spreads down my arm, I fist my palm and hit the bag, my hand barely denting the leather. I do it again and again, my pathetic little punches growing harder because I'm fucked up and tired and confused. I don't know how to feel better. I suck in air through my teeth, finally rearing back and swinging my fist into the bag. The chains creak as it tries to swing, but I still have my other arm wrapped around it. Maybe I'll decide to honor your parents' wishes and keep you until you're of age. I grit my teeth, a sudden burst of energy flooding me, and I release the bag, step back, and swing again, planting my right fist into the bag. At least until I see you laugh. The anger warms my body and I throw another punch. Or yell or scream or cry or fight or joke, and all in more than nods and one-word answers. I slam my fist again, and again. I growl. We'll be snowed in 8. I mock his words to me in a whisper. I shove my fist into the bag 2 more times and then step back, swinging my back leg into the bag once, then twice, and again. And then I just let him leave and didn't say anything, even when he instructed me on how he likes his damn bacon cooked. I mean, if someone is doing something nice for you, you know, like cooking breakfast, you don't balk at how it's cooked, you eat it. God, I wish I had some vegan bacon to really make his day. Amusement pulls at my lips, but I force it back. I keep hitting and kicking the bag, a light sweat grazing my brow as I think of all the things I could have responded with. Why does it bug me so much I didn't get the last word? Why do I let everything go and never say anything? I throw my fist into the bag, and someone is suddenly there, holding it from the other side.
Hi,
Noah says, peering around the bag at me. He looks amused, and I halt, standing up straight. Was he watching me? Was I talking to myself? His eyes crinkle a little more, and I see a self-satisfied grin peek out.
Don't stop, he tells me.
The dark blue t-shirt sets off the color of his eyes, and the same baseball cap holds his hair back where it sits backward on his head. He and his father look a lot alike. I drop my eyes and back off, breathing hard. The muscles in my stomach burn. But he keeps egging me on.
Come on.
He pats the bag where my last punch landed.
He can piss off a saint. Why do you think I hung this punching bag up in the first place?
I press my lips together, still not moving. He sighs and stands up straight.
Okay. Are you making breakfast then?
I dig in my eyebrows, unable to stop myself, and twist my body, swinging my leg with full force into the punching bag. He shoves himself away from the bag just before my foot lands and stands back, wide-eyed, with his palms up. I watch the bag swing back and forth. I wasn't trying to hit him. It would have just been a happy coincidence. but my legs still feel charged, and I almost wish my uncle would walk in right now so I could ask him to hold the bag instead. I'm angry. I'm actually angry. And it feels good. I'm still here. Noah breaks into a chuckle and comes forward, hooking an arm around my neck.
You've got spunk.
I'm too spent to pull away and let him lead me around, walking us both into the house.
Come on, help me make breakfast, he says.
I place the third plate on the table and drop a fork and butter knife next to it, moving to the cabinet to put that fourth plate away.
No, no, Noah says, kicking the fridge closed and dumping the butter and jam on the table. Put the fourth plate down. Caleb can show up anytime.
I glance at the table and then turn back to the cabinet, slipping the extra plate back inside. Caleb has a plate on the table.
You're not eating?
Yes, she is, Jake suddenly says, walking into the kitchen.
He heads for the fridge and pulls out a pitcher of juice and places it in the center of the table, pouring himself a cup of coffee before he sits.
I'm not hungry, I tell him.
Moving to the sink, I rinse off the knife and spatula Noah just finished with.
You didn't have dinner, Jake points out. Sit.
I'm not hungry. And before he says anything else, I stroll out of the kitchen and up the stairs. I feel his eyes on my back, and the farther I go away from them, the more I brace myself for a confrontation. But he doesn't chase after me. He lets me go, and in a moment, I'm in my room, closing the door behind me. The truth is, I'm starving. Pangs hit my stomach, and the scrambled eggs I made, while Noah was busy burning the bacon, looked amazing. Luckily, Noah didn't press for much conversation while we were cooking, but if I eat with them, I'll have to talk to them. I'll wait until they're back outside and then scrounge up something. The green light on my phone flashes from where it lays on the bed, and I walk over and pick it up. Unlocking the phone, I see my home screen with my email and social media apps, all dog-eared with dozens of notifications. Twitter alone has 99-plus alerts. A knot tightens in my stomach. I rarely even use Facebook. Twitter seemed an efficient way to follow the news, and I got Instagram due to peer pressure to keep up with bunkmates from summer camps whom I no longer remember. My thumb hovers over Twitter, and I know I shouldn't look. I'm not ready to face things. But I tap the app on my screen anyway, the notification feed updating. Condolences for your loss, says one person. I scroll through the notifications, some of them direct tweets of sympathies, and some of them where I'm tagged in the conversation. Brave girl, stay strong, writes Rowdy Red, and another directly to me. How does a mother decide to abandon her child for her husband? I'm so sorry. You deserved better. Shut up, comes someone else's response to that tweet. You have no idea what they were going through. I scan tweet after tweet, and it doesn't take long for me to lose what little interest I had in checking my DMs. People yelling at me because they can't yell at my parents. People yelling at each other in conversation. Suicide is self-murder. Murder is the gravest of sins. Your body belongs to God. Taking your life away from him is stealing. At least your mother made her contribution to the world, writes one asshole, captioning a nearly nude picture of my mother from one of her earlier films. I close my eyes and don't open them until I've scrolled past, and it just gets uglier as they carry on their conversation, either oblivious or too callous to care that I'm being tagged in everything they say. She hasn't even made a statement. I think she has, like, Asperger's or something. Yeah, have you seen pictures of her? It's like emotion doesn't register. And then Deep State Tom chimes in with his gem of wisdom. Asperger's is the modern-day pussy's excuse for what we called back in my day being a cold bitch. I'm not cold. And, of course, others are worried about my father's unfinished projects.
Who's finishing the Sun Hunter trilogy with Dahas gone now? I feel like I should say something. One tweet or whatever, even though I don't think it's important for these people to hear me. But I feel compelled to remind them that a human is here, and I shake my head, closing my eyes again. I don't want them to think I didn't love my parents, even though I'm not sure I did. I swallow and start typing out a tweet. Thank you for all the support, everyone, as I mourn their loss? I stop, my fingers hovering over the letters before I backspace and delete what I wrote. I try again. Thank you for the thoughts and prayers during this difficult... Nope, delete. Everything I write feels insincere. I'm not emotional, especially publicly. I wish I could express myself. I wish this were easier. I wish I was different and... I wish... I type. But nothing comes. I hesitate a moment, the urge to speak there but not the courage, and I discard the draft, closing out the app. Pressing my thumb to the Twitter icon, I drag it to the trash and do the same with my Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, and email. Going into the app store, I uninstall each one, cutting myself off. I want to speak, but I'm not ready to deal with the response to whatever I say, so I take away the torture. The accounts still exist, just not my immediate access to them. Plugging my phone back into the charger and far away from my person, I spend the next hour unpacking my suitcases and rearranging the room, despite myself. I never actually decided I would stay, but I know I'm not leaving today, and I need something to do that keeps me away from them. Under things in the top drawer, the night clothes, workout clothes, and t-shirts. I hang up everything else. Jackets, blouses, shirts, pants, jeans. Left to right, dark to light. I arrange all of my shoes on the floor of the closet, knowing my heels won't see the light of day here, but I expected as much. No one to dress for sounds fine to me. I stick the few magazines and books I'd brought on the empty built-in bookshelf and set my makeup cases, hair dryer, and irons neatly next to the desk, and then walk my shampoo and conditioner into the bathroom. I set my soaps on the edge of the tub before pulling out my toothbrush and swiping some toothpaste across the bristles. Finishing my teeth, I secure my toothbrush back inside its travel tube and take that and my toothpaste back into my bedroom, setting them both on the bedside table. I always kept my toothbrush in my bathroom back home, but only because I was the only one to use the bathroom. But men are gross. They leave the toilet seat up, and according to a study I once read, fecal matter sprays into the air when toilets flush. The bacteria can get on everything. No thank you. I brush out my hair, pull it up into a ponytail, and then look around the neat bedroom for something. Anything. I don't want to leave the room, and I might be repacking tomorrow, but if nothing else, at least I didn't think about my parents while I was unpacking, or while I was mad at Jake earlier. Blowing out a breath, I walk out of the room, closing the door behind me, and head downstairs. A drill whirs from the shop, and I hear a pounding in the front of the house, so I head outside, knowing I don't know shit about building motorcycles. Jake stands off to my left, planting his arm against the house and hammering a piece of siding. Can I help? I ask reluctantly, but I don't look him in the eye. He stops hammering, and out of the corner of my eye, I see him look over at me.
Come and hold this, he instructs.
I step down off the porch. Treading through the grass, I approach his side and fit my hands next to his, taking over holding the board for him. He points a nail at the board and pounds that one in before adding two more. He reaches down to pick up another piece of wood, and I follow his lead, helping him. But then I catch sight of something on his waist. His t-shirt is tucked back into his back pocket again, and I try to make out the tattoo. My Mexico. It's in dark blue script, an arch over his left hip, on the side of his torso just above his jeans line. I hold the next board for him as he puts a nail into the center, and then I spot another hammer in the nearby toolbox and take it out with a nail from the coffee can. I place the point on the wood, and Jake taps the space about an inch over from where I have it.
Right there, he instructs and swipes his hand up, showing the line of nails on all the previous boards. Follow the pattern.
I nod, moving the nail. I tap, 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 aware of his eyes on me.
Here, like this, he says and reaches toward me.
But I pull the hammer and nail away, seeing him immediately back off. Putting it back in place, I hammer the nail into the house, accidentally hitting the edge and bending the piece of metal. I clench my teeth and dig out the nail, replacing it with another and trying again. He's still staring at me. I won't learn anything if you don't give me a chance, I tell him. He moves, a hint of humor in his voice.
I didn't say anything.
We continue working in silence, both of us lifting board after board, pounding nail after nail. My pace quickens, and he watches me less and less, probably because I'm not slowing him down anymore. Although this is a two-person job, why wasn't Noah helping him? He's in the garage, but this would have moved a lot faster than trying to do it alone. Noah's words from this morning came back to me, and the meaning behind them finally hits me now, hours later. They don't get along, do they? And I almost smile a little. I suddenly feel a slight measure of camaraderie with Noah. Jake picks up a board, and I take my end, both of us fitting it right underneath the previous piece of siding. But as I slide my hand down its length for a better hold, something sharp digs into my skin and I hiss. I drop my end of the board and bring my hand up, seeing a long, thick piece of wood embedded into my palm. Wincing, I gently tug at the half still sticking out, increasing the force when it doesn't budge. A sting shoots through my hand and I need more light. But before I can turn around to head into the house, Jake takes my hand and inspects the splinter. I try to pull away. I got it. But he ignores me. Focusing on my hand, he presses down on my skin where the sliver is embedded, holding it in place before he snaps it in half, breaking off the slack. I jerk, sucking in air between my teeth.
Who taught you to shoot?
He asks, poking at the rest of the splinter.
I can't imagine Hannes taking up any outdoor activity that didn't include a yacht or a golf cart.
I shoot my eyes up to his face. That's two digs today. Jake's eyes flash to me for a moment like he's waiting for me to say something.
You're not sad at the mention of him.
It's an observation, not a question. My shoulders tense, a little self-conscious because I know what he expects. I'm not acting right, and he's noticed. I look away, hearing the faint, high-pitched sounds of motorcycle engines growing closer. I don't want to talk about my father.
Yeah, me neither.
He digs his thumb under the splinter, trying to push it up and out, and I try to yank my hand away.
Stop that.
But he tightens his hold and pulls my hand back to him.
Stop moving.
While he keeps working the splinter, trying to push it out, I hear the buzz of engines grow louder and spot a team of dirt bikes speeding up the gravel driveway. About five guys crowd the area behind my uncle's truck and pull to a stop, pulling off helmets and chuckling to each other. They're all dressed in colorful attire, looking very motocross, or supercross, or whatever it is they do here. Noah trots out of the shop and approaches one of the guys.
Hey, man.
They shake hands, and he continues wiping the grease off his fingers as he walks around the bikes, taking a look at what the guys are driving.
Hey, how's it going?
He greets another.
Did you run today?
They talk, and Jake tightens his hold on my hand before spinning around and pulling me after him into the shop. Heading over to a workbench, he flips on a lamp and holds my palm under it to get a better view.
I'm sorry. He says.
What? I turn my eyes on him.
The taunt about your dad,
he explains,
still inspecting my splinter. I'm a prick. I'm sure I screwed up my own kids 10 different ways to Sunday, so I have no room to talk. I turn my head, seeing Noah make the rounds to his friends, one of them still straddling his bike and lighting a cigarette. He peers over at me. You're different than I thought you'd be, Jake says softly. I look back to him. Complicated, he explains. Tough to read. And even if I could read you, I'm not sure I can be a comfort to you. He gives a weak smirk. I'm not upset by their deaths, Tiernan, but I am sorry you are. I turn my eyes away again, toward the guys outside. I'm not upset. The guy in Noah's group of friends with the frat boy haircut and crystal eyes is still staring at me, a mischievous smile playing on his lips as he smokes. Is that Caleb? I feel Jake's eyes on me, too. I don't want to talk about my father, I state again, before he has the chance to keep going. But pain slices through my hand like a spider bite, and I hiss, meeting his eyes again. What the hell? That hurt. But as I glare up at him, the splinter is forgotten, and I stop breathing for a moment. Warmth spreads up my neck as his gaze hovers down on mine, hard and angry, but kind of puzzled, too, like he's trying to figure me out. His eyes aren't blue. I thought they were, like Noah's. They're green, like summer grass. A breeze blows through the open doors of the shop, the chatter and laughter outside, miles away, as a wisp of my hair, loose from the ponytail, blows across my lips. His eyes drop to my mouth, and I stop breathing, everything getting warm. A trickle of sweat glides down his neck, and the hair on my arm stands on end, aware of his naked chest. We're too close. I swallow, my mouth sandy and dry. He finally blinks a few times, and then he brings the palm of my hand up to his lips, the warmth of his mouth trying to suck the wood from my hand. My mouth falls open a little as his teeth gnaw and tease the splinter, and my skin is sucked and tickled. My fingertips graze the scruff on his cheek. I can do that. I don't need your help. But I can't manage to say it out loud. Oh, shit, I hear someone say outside. Pulling my attention away from my uncle, I look outside to see Noah checking out someone's bike. The magazine cover turns his eyes on me again. Who's that? He asks Noah. Noah follows his gaze and sees me, but ignores him. Stay away from the local guys, you understand? Jake tells me. I look up at him. He continues. If you get a boyfriend, you won't be able to see him once we're snowed in anyway. Besides, they're not your type. How do you know? Because I'm telling you they're not your type. He shoots back. I will let you know when one is. What a Neanderthal. For Christ's sake. I keep quiet, no desire to argue with him. I'm not looking for a guy, but I can take care of myself. His sons grew up with him in their faces. I'm used to making my own decisions. They're bored, he tells me. And when you're bored, you only want two things, and beer doesn't last forever. So they're different from other guys my age, how? I know what teenagers are into. I know what men want from women. I'm not a fragile rose petal. His teeth work my palm and flutters hit my stomach. I look up at him, the fact that I now live with three healthy, semi-young males, all of who are also part of the local guys he's warning me about. You don't get bored up here during the winter? I taunt, dropping my voice to just between us. When the beer runs out? His eyes tighten at the corners, getting my meaning. Are he and his sons any different? Will there be more naked women hanging out around the bathroom? He finally gets hold of the splinter and pulls it out, but I don't look away, even as it stings. He lowers my hand, rubbing his thumb over the small wound. It's fine. I pull it away, wiping whatever little blood was there.
Are you sorry you came? He asks me. Surprisingly, I'm not taken off guard by the question, probably because I wouldn't be scared to be rude if the truth was in the negative. I don't know, I tell him honestly. I'm not happy, but I wouldn't be happy at home or at Bryn Mawr or probably anywhere. I didn't expect to be happy coming here, so it doesn't matter. I look out of the shop, all of the guys revving their engines and turning their bikes around to leave. Noah backs away, obviously not joining them.
Do you like being here?
Jake presses. I don't know, I tell him again.
Where would you rather be?
I don't know. Why does he want to know? I don't. I finally meet his eyes, chewing the corner of my mouth.
I don't want to be. I trail off, trying to find the words. I don't want to be, but the sentence comes out sounding complete.
His eyes turn guarded as he looks at me. I don't want to be anywhere, I quickly say. I might have had some misperceptions about what to expect here, but I at least thought three single men wouldn't desire a lot of touchy-feely conversation. This guy seems to want to connect, and it's aggravating me. I turn and start to walk out of the shop, just as the dirt bikes are all speeding away.
Make some sandwiches, please, Jake calls after me. Just put them in the fridge to grab and go. Doesn't matter what kind, we're not picky.
We're not picky. I walk into the house, head for the kitchen, and yank open both fridge doors. Then I pull open the crisper and freezer drawers below as I take stock of everything I have to work with. He's keeping me busy. I should be grateful. And he's giving me a chore where I don't have to talk to anyone. I like to cook. I can listen to music and be left alone. And sandwiches aren't hard. I tap my fingers on the door handle as I hold open the fridge. I don't know. He just rubs me the wrong way, like he's enjoying his guardianship a little too much. My parents wouldn't have cared if I'd had orgies in my bedroom as long as nothing wound up on Snapchat. This guy, though. Already he's flexing his dominance. Mind you, I have no interest in orgies or men right now anyway, but I've been raising myself for years, and now I have to downshift. It's too much to ask. I may only be 17, but that's only on paper. Why the hell does he want lunch now anyway? Breakfast was an hour ago. And at that, my stomach growls. I falter a moment, holding my hand to my stomach. I didn't eat breakfast. Or anything since the berries at breakfast yesterday. Pulling out lunch meat, the condiments, and some lettuce, I get busy, building some sandwiches, taking bites of one to get something into me, and then I cut them diagonally and place the triangles onto a large plate. I find the saran wrap in a drawer on the island and wrap up the tray, setting it in the fridge. Not sure if that's their lunch, but that's all they're getting out of me. I'll see if he needs me to run into town for anything. I could use a drive. But just as I go to close the refrigerator door, I see a drop of water hit the glass just above the crisper drawer. Bending down, I put my hand in a small puddle of water. It's leaking. Peering into the back of the fridge, I try to gauge where it's coming from and see the motor frosted over and caked with ice. I stand up straight and chew the corner of my mouth. Should I tell him? I'm sure he knows. Spotting their iPad on the counter, I grab it and turn it on. A password prompt comes up, and right away I enter "No Mercy," hazarding a guess. It immediately unlocks. Heading to YouTube, I check the model of the refrigerator and bring up some videos. Over the next hour, I empty the refrigerator and work it away from the wall, putting all of my weight into pulling it out and unplugging the power. Then I swipe some tools from the shop and get to work following the video's directions, chipping away and unthawing the motor, repairing the leak in the tube, and reassembling everything. I'm not sure if it will work or how mad he'll be if I made it worse, but that's a perk of being rich. I'll buy him a new one. I stop twisting the screwdriver, realization hitting all of a sudden. Can I buy him a new one? I mean, minors can't inherit money. Their guardians have power of attorney until they're of age. So technically, my inheritance is completely in his hands, unless my parents put something into a trust, which their lawyer might have had the foresight to do, but should I be worried? The money never mattered, but that's only because I always had it. I talk a big talk, but if I can't pay for college, then that changes things. Did my parents trust him with me and my well-being, or was there just not anyone else? I don't know if I can trust him, but I definitely didn't trust them to do what was right for me. This guy has my future in his grip. For the next 10 weeks, anyway. Despite the kick-up of my pulse, I forge ahead, lost in thought, and refasten the motor cover and reach behind the appliance, plugging it back in. The motor gently purrs, and cool air starts to breathe back into the machine. So far, so good.
"You did that?"
I hear someone ask. I turn my head, seeing Noah standing at the island, shirt off, sweaty, and out of breath, as he looks at the video on the iPad I have propped up on the counter. Looking over to where the leak was, he sees it's now dry.
"Good job," he says. "We've been meaning to get on that."
I turn back around, but not before I take another quick glance, noticing his torso and arms are completely clean of any tattoos. I don't know why that strikes me as off. Maybe since his father has one, I thought he would. Getting busy, I reload all of the food into the fridge, faintly hearing some kind of machine running outside and guessing it must be Jake.
"So, when do you turn 18?
Noah asks. I don't stop as he just leans against the island watching me. November 1st.
"You gonna leave then?"
I glance at him, taking a moment to realize what he means. I don't have to stay now. Didn't his father tell him he gave me a choice on the phone?
"I would leave," he offers. "I would leave in a heartbeat. You're here and you don't have to be. I have to be here, but I don't want to be."
"It's as good a place as any," I reply softly, placing some condiments back into the door shelf.
"Why?"
"Because you're still you, no matter where you go," I retort. I stop and look up at him, his sweaty hair falling in his eyes and his hat hanging from his fingers. He still looks puzzled. "There are just as many happy people in Cleveland as there are in Paris," I explain, "and just as many sad ones."
"Yeah, well, I'd rather be sad on a beach."
I snort, smiling despite myself. I laugh a little, but I quickly turn away, pushing the amusement down. But in a moment, he's at my side, pushing the A1 and Heinz sauce on the rack on the door. He stares down at me, and my stomach dips.
"You have a pretty smile, cuz," he tells me. "If you stay, I'll make you smile some more."
Oh, geez, isn't he charming? Ignoring him, I finish reloading everything, not even caring that nothing is organized. He laughs under his breath and helps me, both of us getting the job done in a few minutes. Jake walks in and heads for the fridge, and I move out of the way, letting him in. I gather the tools I used and start to walk away to put them back in the shop where I found them, but I hear my uncle's gruff voice.
"Where's the sausage?" he asks.
I turn toward him, seeing him sift through all the shelves, nothing where he left it now. "There was mold growing on it," I tell him. "I threw it away along with a few other things." But he just looks at me, and I steel my spine.
"It can be cut off," he says.
Cut off? Gross. There are levels of decay. The mold just makes it easier to see the really bad parts.
"You don't waste any time, do you?"
he gripes, moving things out of the way, appearing to look for something else.
"Everything's rearranged."
"Dad." Noah tries to step in, but his father just stands up straight and looks at his son.
"And where the hell did you go?"
Jake asks. He had left earlier. Was he not supposed to? But Noah's jaw just tenses, and instead of answering, he shakes his head and leaves. I don't know if I envy Noah or what. He doesn't get along with his father either, but at least he has his attention. I drop my eyes and tap the iPad screen, closing out YouTube and the refrigerator repair video I used.
Look,
Jake says, turned toward me and his voice lower now.
Don't go above and beyond, okay? We run a well-oiled machine here, so just do what I ask. Reorganizing the refrigerator or cabinets or decorating, anything like that is not necessary. Or really appreciated, to be honest. If you need ideas for chores, I can give you plenty.
I nod, and I set the tools on the counter and leave the kitchen. That night, hours into a thunderstorm that had been raging since after dinner, I snap awake, every muscle in my body tight and hot. I clench the sheets at my side, my chest rising and falling with rapid breaths and sweat dripping down my neck. I gasp, trying to breathe, but I can't fucking move. I try to swallow, but it takes 4 times before I'm able to wet my dry throat. I roll my eyes around the room, fear lingering in my brain, but I'm not sure why, as I take inventory of my surroundings. The room is dark, the storm still rocking against my windows, and I hear the drops pummel the deck outside my room. Slowly, I stretch out my fingers, prying my hands off the sheets, and I sit up, wincing at the ache in my shoulders and neck from being locked up too long. Did I dream? I close my eyes, the tears I don't remember crying seeping out and joining the ones already wetting my face. I don't remember anything, but I must have been crying or screaming, because my throat is burning and my knuckles ache from clenching my fists. I quickly glance at my door, relieved to see it still closed. Thank God I wasn't loud enough to wake anyone. I throw off the covers and walk to the chest of drawers to retrieve my phone. When I was a kid, I had terrible episodes of screaming and crying, absolute midnight mania, where I'd wake up and carry on, but I was completely asleep. They said it was night terrors, and when it was over, when Mirai or whatever nanny soothed me back to the sleep, I never remembered anything. I only knew it happened, because my muscles would be drained. My throat would be dry, and I'd wake up with eyes burning from the tears. I pick up my phone and turn it on. 1:15 a.m. Tears prick my throat, but I push them down. It was always somewhere around 1:15 a.m., my parents had said. Some kind of internal clock thing. But my night terrors ended. I haven't had one since 4th grade, maybe? I drop my phone back onto the dresser, propping my elbows on top and holding my head in my hands. I'm an adult. I'm alone. I glance at the door again. I don't want them to hear me screaming like some nutcase. I finally notice a sting on my arm and look down to see 3 red half moons on my forearm, and I instantly know what they are, the memory coming back like it was yesterday. I'd clawed myself in my sleep. The bag of candy still sits on my dresser, and I shoot out my arm, swiping the bag off the dresser and into the garbage can off to the side. What the hell was I doing in my sleep? How could I not wake up? What happens if I'm alone in LA or when I go off to college and I have to have a roommate? I shouldn't be alone, but I'm not sure I should stay here with them. My parents' death could be triggering it, or it could be something else.
Chapter 5. Jake. She shouldn't be here. This is a mistake. I can't do Tiernan any good. I can barely keep my own kids under control. Noah is 10 seconds from packing a bag and leaving any day, and Caleb... Jesus. Caleb. I've never been able to imagine that kid's future, because men like him don't live long. He makes too many enemies. I throw off the covers, having a shitty night's sleep despite all the space I had in bed without Jules there. I need to start locking the doors at night, I mean, what guy doesn't want to wake up at 2 a.m. to a 23-year-old naked redhead on top of him? But she's making a habit of it. And the sex isn't very good. I rub my hands over my face. I don't know. Maybe it is good and I'm just bored. I can't talk to her. Or the three who came before her. I certainly don't have any business having another responsibility under my roof right now. Or ever. I'm a terrible father. And I'm too old for more surprises like a teenage girl living in my house. Hannes could go fuck himself wherever he was in hell. Sitting up, I throw my legs over the side of the bed and stand up, grabbing my jeans off the chair. That son of a bitch. I hadn't spoken to my stepbrother or anyone in that family for over 20 years. But I'm worth a mention in his will. Was there really no one else who knew her and would have gladly taken her? But no. I called her up that night. Heard something in her voice that grabbed hold of me, and I spoke before I had a chance to think. The kid has problems. Of course, that makes her no different than my own kids, but Hannes and Amelia fucked her up. She's so different than I thought she'd be. Quiet. Rigid. Afraid. I have no idea how to handle her. I'm not smart enough for this. People like her, who don't show emotion, are finding other ways to release it. So, what is it with her? Drugs? Alcohol? Cutting? Sex? I stop. An image of Tiernan in the back seat of some car, sweat on her face, hair sticking to her cheek, eyes closed, breathing hard, pops into my head. I let out a breath and yank my t-shirt off the chair, tucking it into my back pocket for later. She better not. I'm not supplying this town with new pussy. I cock my neck side to side, hearing it crack a couple of times. Hannes and Amelia should never have had a kid. I never understood what her parents saw in each other, but shit sticks together, I guess. The best thing that could have happened to Tiernan was to lose them. And I'm only sorry it didn't happen sooner. I walk to my bedroom door, open it, and cross the hall to her room. I knock. Tiernan! It's only just after 5, and I rub the sore muscles on my neck. I don't want to wake her up, but I didn't get a chance to apologize yesterday because she stayed in her room the rest of the damn day. But I'm not letting her hide in here just because I was an asshole. When there's no answer, I knock again. Tiernan! The house is silent, other than the faint music Noah sleeps to drifting out from underneath his bedroom door. Hesitantly, I crack open her door, slowly in case she freaks out, and peek my head inside. Tiernan. It's Jake, I say in a low voice. Her smell hits me, and I pause. It smells like skin wet from the rain. Deja vu suddenly washes over me, and I inhale deeper. Skin with the faintest hint of fragrance. Like that soft, hidden place behind a woman's ear that smells like her, but also a little of her perfume and shampoo and sweat. And suddenly, I can taste it. It used to be my favorite place to kiss her. God, I'd forgotten. I clear my throat, straighten my spine. Tiernan, I call, but it comes out as a bark. Not sure why I'm aggravated now. I take a step into the room, but as the bed comes into view, I see it's already made, and she's definitely not in it. My heart skips a beat, and I open the door wide, looking around her bedroom. She wouldn't have left. The lights are off, but the dim morning light pours through her balcony doors, and I see the room is just as neat as when she arrived, although a few things have been moved. Her personal items sit on the top of her desk and her dresser, and I see a pair of flip-flops by the bedstand. Okay. She didn't leave then. Not sure how she could anyway, remote as we are, but I wouldn't put it past her to try. Leaving the room, I close the door behind me and give Noah's door 2 hard pounds as I pass by and head down the stairs. He needs to get his ass up too, and the fact that I still need to be my 20-year-old kid's alarm clock is ridiculous. As soon as I hit the living room, though, I smell coffee and know I'm not the only one up. Tiernan works at something on the table, and I glance over, trying to see what she's doing as I walk to the coffee pot. Her hair is piled into a messy bun on the top of her head as she appears to glue pieces of something together. I pour a cup of coffee, swallowing hard. "Thank you for fixing the fridge," I say, not looking at her. I felt like an ass yesterday when Noah told me that everything in the fridge was out of its usual order because she had to empty it to fix it. A huge ass. And after the surprise wore off, I was impressed. So much of the world simply replaces broken things or hires out to have it fixed, not wanting to trouble themselves to learn things on their own, even with the plethora of help there is on the internet. She's self-sufficient. When she still hasn't responded, I turn around, taking a drink from my mug as I slowly approach. She pieces together a plate that appears to have broken, gluing each piece carefully together. It's one of our green ones. The corner of my mouth turns up in a small smile. She really didn't have to bother. It's a cheap plate, and they're easy to break. I shoot my eyes up to her face again, her gaze focused, lips closed, and her breathing even and controlled like I'm not standing right here. "Tiernan," I say again. But she still doesn't respond. Jesus, it's like talking to my kids. Are all teenagers like this? Putting the last piece in place, she holds it for a few moments, and then takes a paper towel to clean up any bubbled glue.
"Is there anything I can help with today?"
she suddenly asks, finally glancing up at me. "Huh?" She looks up at me, stray strands of hair falling around her face and in her eyes, and again, I'm taken off guard. I'd braced myself for a confrontation after the way I'd acted yesterday, but she's ready to move on. Should I push a conversation or let it alone? I run my hand over my scalp. Whatever. If she's going to make this easy for me, I won't complain. "Yeah," I say, letting out a sigh of relief. She rises from her chair, standing up right in front of me, but her eyes immediately land on my chest, and she quickly looks away. I tighten my lips and pull my t-shirt out of my back pocket to slip it on. Hanez, who was born wearing a suit, and Brynmore, an education that's comprised of same-sex classmates. I guess she's not used to this. She'll get her feet wet here, though.
"Where do you need me?"
she asks, looking ready to be anywhere but the kitchen. I hide my smile. "I have to, milk Bernadette," I tell her as I turn around to grab a cup of coffee. Her gaze falters. "The cow," I explain. "The horses need to be fed, and the stalls need to be cleared. Noah will show you how it's done."
"And then?"
"And then?" I grip my mug, leaning against the counter. "We have work in the shop to get to, so if you want to do breakfast, that'd be a big help."
"I should have asked nicer yesterday."
She simply nods. I start to walk past her, but stop and look down at her. "The bacon exactly like you did yesterday," I say. "Got it?" She keeps her eyes planted on the floor for another moment, but then she looks up and meets my eyes.
"Got it."
I stare down at her. I wish she'd smile. I don't expect it, given what's happened to her, but I have a feeling she doesn't smile a lot regardless. She is pretty, though. I'd give her parents that much. Flawless skin that looks almost porcelain, high cheekbones, the hollows rosy, eyebrows a little darker than her hair, framing long lashes, and Amelia's stormy gray eyes more piercing than her mother's because she has the same dark ring around the iris that her father had. She's more her mother, though. The slender neck, the curve of the waist, the spine and shoulders that made her seem statuesque sometimes. On Amelia, it looked cold. On Tiernan, makes you wonder how she'd bend and move in someone's arms. Someone's. My body warms, and I hold her gaze for a moment. Amelia. And Hannes. Amusement tugs at the corners of my mouth, but I don't let it show. I don't need her to stay. It's no skin off my nose if she leaves, but I can forbid her from leaving if I want to. If for no other reason than to burn off my exceeding supply of frustration with her father, to make her work off his debt to me, to fuck up her life just a little bit, to make her... She wets her pink lips, and my breath catches for a moment. If I were a worse man. Setting down my mug, I head to the closet and pull my Rockies cap off the coat rack, fitting it on my head. I need to get out of here. I'm not sure where the hell my mind is going, but it's not right. She's my responsibility, not my opportunity for payback. Not to mention, she's quiet, boring, and a little pathetic. I can't torture someone who won't fight back. A moment later, I hear Noah's footfalls on the stairs and watch him head for the coffee pot with his t-shirt slung over his shoulder and no shoes or socks on. We've got a lot to do today, I warn him, knowing it takes him at least 20 minutes to get out the door after he wakes up. I have two sons, and neither one of them is entirely present. Caleb was easier when he was here, and Noah was always here, but never easy. Show Tiernan how to do the stalls and feed the horses. He nods without looking at me as a yawn stretches across his face. I pull on my boots and head back into the kitchen, transferring my coffee into a travel mug to take outside with me. I hear Noah's voice. Do you have an undershirt on? I look over at him and Tiernan, seeing her nod. She wears jeans and a peasant blouse, not really dressy, but it's white. Take off your shirt then, he says, taking a drink. She pinches her eyebrows at him. I'm giving you a new one, he explains, tossing the flannel over his shoulder onto the back of a chair, and kick off your shoes. He heads across the kitchen, opening the shop door and reaching inside. He pulls in a pair of his old, muddy rain boots from when he was 13 or so and tosses them across the floor at her. It's a good idea. She won't want her expensive clothes ruined. I dart my eyes to her, expecting her to look uncertain, but she only hesitates a moment before slowly starting to unbutton her blouse. I clear my throat again and look away. She should be doing that in the privacy of the bathroom. Out of the corner of my eye, I see her pull off the shirt and fold it over the back of a chair. She has something else white on underneath, and I see Noah approach her, but I keep my eyes averted as I grab an apple to take outside with me. An invisible hook keeps tugging at my chin, pulling at me to look at her. But I just blink a few times and charge out of the room, biting hard into the apple. This is bullshit. An hour later, I'm pulling up to the stables in an ATV loaded with a few bales of hay when my phone rings. Pulling it out, I look at the number and see it's the same area code as Tiernan's. Hello? I answer. I don't want any crap, but it could be her parents' lawyer calling, so...
Hi, Mr. Vanderberg, a woman with a slight accent says. I'm Mariah Patel, Mrs. DeHaas's assistant.
I hold the phone to my ear, pulling on my work gloves. How does a dead woman still have an assistant? But she doesn't respond, and I almost smile because I've succeeded at being insensitive. What do you want? I ask, hauling a bale into my hands and stacking it next to the stable. Tiernan has a phone if you want to talk to her.
I wanted to talk to you, actually.
For Christ's sake, why? Miss Patel is silent for a moment and then inquires.
How is she?
How is she? That's why you're calling me? She's fine, I grunt, pulling another brick of hay up off the ATV. She's quiet again, and after a few more moments, I take the phone in my hand, about ready to hang up. I don't have time for this.
Look, I don't know how to say this in a way that isn't completely awkward, she finally tells me. So I'm just going to say it.
Good. I glance through the doorway of the stable, seeing Noah and Tiernan's heads over the top of a stall as they churn the hay.
I'd like her to come home, Patel says.
Tiernan can leave whenever she wants. I didn't make her come here. But at the same time, who is this woman to tell me what to do with my niece? Mariah Patel goes on.
I can't make her. And she'll probably be angry I'm talking to you. But? I'm worried about her, she finally states. Tiernan doesn't talk about things, and her parents passing away like they did won't allow her the opportunity to resolve any of her issues with them. I want to be there for her. I'm worried everything building up inside of her will eventually spill over.
Spill over? Who is this woman? What arrogance to think I can't handle this. I mean, I can't, but she doesn't know that.
I'm sure you've noticed that she's quiet, Patel tells me.
And? If a quiet kid is all I'm dealing with, then maybe I do have all the experience necessary to handle this. And you think you can raise her better, I ask?
I think you don't know her. I do.
I squeeze my fist around the phone. A stranger I've never met or heard of until today lays claim to my brother's child, and she thought this conversation was going to go well? And I think if I turn over guardianship of Tiernan to you, I say, that puts you in charge of not only her emotional support, but her finances as well. Am I right, Miss Patel? She falls silent. And I smile to myself. Why else would someone who has no obligation to an underage orphan want that responsibility unless that underage orphan is loaded? But then she speaks up, her tone firm.
I've had access to her finances since I started working for her parents 10 years ago, she says. I can be trusted. Can you?
I narrow my eyes.
Just think of what all those millions will do for your business, Mr. Vanderberg, she says.
And I clench my teeth so goddamn hard an ache flashes through my jaw like lightning. Is that what she thinks? I would sooner flush that money down the fucking toilet. Her place, I finally grit out, is with her family.
Her place is with someone who loves her.
This conversation is over. And I start to pull the phone away from my ear. But then I hear her voice again and stop.
She used to wake up every night around 1 in the morning, Patel says, like clockwork and without an alarm. Did you know that, Mr. Vanderberg?
I remain silent, unsure if she's telling the truth and hating that she knows something I don't if it is.
Do you know why? She taunts further.
I glance into the stable at Tiernan, watching her hop out of one of the stalls with her arm covering her nose and mouth as she dry heaves at the smell. Noah pats her on the back, silently laughing behind her, but then she swats at him, and he just laughs harder.
You would think her family would know that about her, Patel mocks me. Goodbye, Mr. Vanderberg.
And then the line is dead. I stare at my screen for a moment and then back at Tiernan. She and Noah are bantering back and forth, a big-ass grin on his face, and keeping the rake from her as she tries to take it back. Finally, she grabs hold of it and marches back into the stall. I smile to myself. She's stronger than that woman gives her credit for. Mariah Patel may care about Tiernan, but she's had her for 10 years. What good did it do the kid? That woman had her chance. Pulling a cloth out of my back pocket, I head into the stable, shaking out the square and matching 2 corners to make a triangle. Finding Tiernan in a stall, I see her bent over, shuffling the hay with her ponytail sticking out the back of one of Noah's caps. Hey, I touch her back. She jerks up and spins around, bumping into my chest. I hold up the cloth, gesturing toward her face. It's clean, I tell her. It'll help with the smell. I move to tie it around her nose and mouth, but she shakes her head.
I'm okay.
I laugh under my breath, expecting as much. Why are you so stubborn? And I move around her, tying it at the back of her head before she has a chance to fight me more. Coming around the front, I only see her eyes peering out from under the cap and the rest covered with the handkerchief. She looks like a bank robber, and I almost snort. but she doesn't look happy right now, so I keep the joke to myself. You don't have to be so tough, I tease, knocking the bill of her cap. It fucking stinks in here. You'll get used to it, though. But instead of saying thank you, she simply turns back around and continues working. I stand there a moment, my muscles tight with slight frustration.
I'm sure you've noticed that she's quiet.
Yeah, lady, she's quiet. Slowly, I turn to leave, but I glance over my shoulder at her once again. But when I do, she's staring at me. She's stopped raking. Her eyes, dark under the shadow of the cap, make my heart skip a beat. And I pause. But quickly, as if it was nothing, she puts her head back down and starts working again. I stand there, watching her.
Everything building up inside of her will eventually spill over, Mariah had said.
I turn my lips up in a slight smile. Maybe that's exactly what the kid needs. Finished already? I asked when Noah and Tiernan headed over to me. I stand in the truck bed, pushing the broom and the last remnants of hay, dirt, and shit I've had to haul this week.
Don't worry, Noah chides. We did it right. She's on a mission, though. Do you have more?
Tiernan looks up at me expectantly with my handkerchief around her neck. More. She breathes hard, and I pull out my phone, checking the time. They got done with that a lot sooner than when it's just Noah and Caleb. I stick my phone back in my pocket. Take the clothes off the line, I tell her, and I need fresh soapy water, hot. And then I look at her. And then breakfast. She nods and spins around, hurrying back to the house. Noah looks after her.
I remember when I was new to chores, he says wistfully. It was kind of fun.
For a few minutes. I shake my head. I don't think Tiernan finds this fun.
If we train her up, it'll be like I'm not even gone, he tells me.
I shoot him a look, but I don't stop as I shove another pile of debris out of the back of the truck. Don't piss me off today, I warn him. He's not leaving, and Tiernan isn't here to take his workload. I can see him looking at me out of the corner of my eye, wanting this conversation, but I won't do it. We've had this talk, and I'm done. He's not going away. He's 20 fucking years old. He doesn't know what he wants or what he needs. Making a mistake takes seconds. Living with them takes a lifetime, and I don't want my sons to suffer like that. Before he can try to fight me again, I hop down from the truck and head for the house to get my own soapy water.
Chapter 6. Tiernan. Is it okay if I take a truck to town and do some food shopping? I sit at the breakfast table, toying with the burnt bacon in my hand and feeling it crumble onto the plate like a potato chip. I can pick up anything you might need, too, while I'm out. Jake looks up at me, chewing his food, and I zone in right between his eyes, focusing, to get my mind off the fact that his stupid shirt is off again. I mean, seriously, do these men ever get completely dressed? Women survive with the heat and sweat all the time without discarding our clothing. What do you need to eat other than bacon? He questions, but I keep my expression even. Not indulging his joke. He finally laughs.
Of course you can take the truck.
Reaching into his back pocket, he opens his wallet and pulls out some cash, tossing it into the middle of the table, while Noah downs the rest of his milk. I have money, I insist. I can contribute to my own expenses. But he just argues back.
So do I, he says. We don't need DeHaas money in this house.
DeHaas money. He slips his wallet back into his pocket, and I glance down at the $100 he dropped on the table, far more than I actually need. But I think he knows that. He just wants me to see that he can accommodate my lofty standards as much as his brother could. Unfortunately, I can't stop myself. You won't take DeHaas money, but you'll take a DeHaas. And I raise my eyes again. Locking gazes with him. If he resents my parents' money in this house, then surely he resents me in this house, too.
You're ours,
he states plainly. We pay for what you need. I stare at him another moment, and then Noah reaches into the middle of the table, snatching up the cash.
I'll go with her. I need some shit.
We both get up, clearing our plates and loading the dishwasher.
Toss the plastic bags into the barrel when you unpack groceries, Jake tells us, still eating at the table. I'm burning trash this afternoon.
I stop and glare at the back of his head. Burning trash? I repeat, searching for an argument he'll listen to. Please, don't. It's bad for you breathing it in, and it's really bad for the planet. I circle the table to face him. It's illegal for a reason. Burning leaves is one thing, but plastic and... His fork clangs on the plate, and he picks his cup of coffee up.
Garbage trucks don't get up here, sweetheart.
We'll figure it out, I retort. You can't burn plastic or inked paper or...
California girls are environmentally conscious, aren't they?
Noah laughs from the sink.
No plastic straws. You have to bring your own bags to the supermarket. I hear they only flush the toilet every other time they go, too.
I dig in my eyebrows so deep it hurts. Yeah, sometimes we'll even shower together to conserve water. It's awesome. I hear Jake snort and I drop my eyes again, arching an eyebrow at myself. Not sure where my newfound sarcasm came from, but I harden my jaw, not allowing myself to enjoy it. I turn to leave, but I stop and glare at Jake again. And that DeHaas money is hard-earned, I say. My parents made contributions to the world. People value what they did, whether you liked them or not, whether I liked them or not. I blink at the words coming out of my mouth, surprising myself. But while I had my problems with my parents, I realize for the first time that I'm a little protective of their legacy. The world will remember them, I point out.
And so will I. Jake leans back in his chair, regarding me with an amused look. Especially with you around.
I hesitate, his words unnerving me for some reason. The sense of permanence in his tone, like I'm here to stay. I might not stick around, I suddenly blurt out. But then I immediately regret it. He took me in when he didn't have to, and I came here willingly. I should be more grateful. But he did threaten to keep me here against my will yesterday, too. You're kind of a prick sometimes, I tell him. Noah jerks his head in our direction, his eyes wide as his gaze darts from me to his father. But Jake makes no move, just sitting there and looking at me with the same amusement on his face.
I'm a teddy bear, Tiernan.
He stands up, his fingers threaded through the handle of his coffee cup.
You still haven't met Caleb yet.
I hear Noah laugh behind him, both of them in on some joke I clearly don't understand. I twist around, heading up to my room to clean up.
Put on a proper shirt before you go out,
Jake yells after me. I snarl to myself, stomping a little harder on the stairs than I mean to. I make your food. It's really not smart to provoke me. I shower quickly, getting the sticky heat off me, as well as the dirt and smell from the barn. I'm pretty sure I'll have to shower again later, just so I can wash my hair. I don't have time right now, though. Running a brush through my hair, I slip on the same baseball cap Noah loaned me this morning and rush out of the room with my little crossbody purse and wearing a fresh pair of jeans and a t-shirt. Jake is actually pretty stocked on food, especially fresh stuff, but in the rush to come here, I'd forgotten to arrange for a few other things I'd need. When I walk outside, Noah is already waiting for me. He sits on a dirt bike with a helmet on his head and another one in his hand. I hesitate for a moment, glancing at the truck behind his bike. Are we driving separately, or... What are you doing? I ask, stepping down the wide wooden steps.
Taking us to town.
He holds the spare helmet out to me, and I look down at it and then back up to him, seeing wisps of his blonde hair hanging over his forehead under the helmet. I raise my eyebrows.